Viewpoint on Mormonism, the program that examines the teachings of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints from a biblical perspective. Viewpoint on Mormonism is sponsored by Mormonism Research Ministry. Since 1979, Mormonism Research Ministry has been dedicated to equipping the body of Christ with answers regarding the Christian faith in a manner that expresses gentleness and respect. And now, your host for today's Viewpoint on Mormonism.
Glad you could be with us for this edition of Viewpoint on Mormonism. I'm your host, Bill McKeever, founder and director of Mormonism Research Ministry. With me today is my colleague, Eric Johnson. We are continuing our look at the Journal of Discourses, a 26-volume set of sermons given by Mormon leaders during the 19th century, the last part of the 19th century. And one of the things that we have noticed is when you look at the journal, that 19th century Mormon leaders were much more prone to predict the future than they are in the 21st century or even late 20th century. In fact, I can't recall Thomas S. Monson ever giving any type of a prediction. I can't remember Gordon Hinckley giving any type of prediction, certainly not one that you could really hold them to see whether or not they really were being instructed by God regarding future events. Mostly it's just folksy tales and occasional doctrine, but that's about it. But that's not the way it was in 19th century Utah. For instance, let me give you an example. In volume 18 of the Journal of Discourses, this was in 1875. This was a talk given by Wilford Woodruff, who at the time was a Mormon apostle. He would later become the fourth president of the Mormon Church. He would become a controversial president because he was the one responsible for the manifesto which officially ended polygamy. Well, at least until 1904, when they had to come up with a second manifesto. Anyway, he predicted in 1875, what? What did he say, Eric?
On page 37, he said, "I believe there are many children now living in the mountains of Israel who will never taste of death. That is, they will dwell on the earth at the coming of the Lord Jesus Christ." At the end of that paragraph, he writes, "It is my faith that hundreds and thousands of the children that have been given to us will be alive in the flesh when Christ comes in the clouds of heaven in power and great glory. The Lord will not disappoint the inhabitants of the earth in these last days in regard to his second coming any more than he has with regard to other great events and dispensations."
So it sounds pretty clear that he thinks someone living in 1875, let's say it's a newborn baby. A newborn baby is born on June 24th, 1875. He is assuming that some child or someone is going to be alive when the Lord returns. Now, the problem is, of course, is that took place, what, 137 years ago. There is nobody alive that was alive when Wilford Woodruff made this prediction. We would have to assume that this is a false prophecy. But one of the prophecies that we often hear Mormons referring to happens to deal with the New Jerusalem. It deals with a temple that was supposed to be built in the Independence area. Now, the Mormons recently built a temple in the Independence area, but it is several miles away from the specific area that Joseph Smith dedicated for the temple back in 1832. When you and I were visiting the open house, I was listening very carefully to see if any of the hosts or hostesses would make any references at all to the prophecy found in Section 84 and try to tie the building of this new temple with what Joseph Smith had predicted back in 1832. I heard no such reference. I heard no such connection. I didn't read anything that gave me the impression that Mormons believed that this was the fulfillment of that prophecy. Well, if Joseph Smith predicted that a temple was going to be built by the generation that was alive in 1832, and obviously there's nobody that's alive, what do the Mormons do with that? How do they explain this? It's not there. It's still a vacant lot. What did Joseph Fielding Smith say? What was the excuse that he used? Now, he was the 10th president of the Mormon Church.
Yeah, and he said, he recited D&C 124, 49 through 54, and he used that explanation to say why they were not allowed to complete the Missouri Temple. That passage says in part that they were hindered by the hands of their enemies and by their oppression. And so the idea was because the enemies of the church did not allow for that to come through, therefore that somehow let that prophecy off the hook.
Right. And Joseph Fielding Smith is kind of looking at that statement in Section 124 as a permanent cancellation of what the saints were supposed to do, not because they were unfaithful, but because they were faithful, but their enemies hindered them from accomplishing that temple being built. Here's the difference, folks. We don't see that same type of attitude in the Journal of Discourses. In fact, we still see in the Journal of Discourses a hope, an anticipation that the saints would eventually go back to Independence, Missouri, and fulfill that prophecy, build up the city, New Jerusalem, and also build that temple. For instance, what does it say in Volume 9, Eric? We have George A. Smith on March 10th, 1861, page 71.
He said, "And let me remind you that it is predicted that this generation shall not pass away till the temple shall be built and the glory of the Lord rest upon it according to the promises."
So the question is, why does George A. Smith still think that that prophecy is going to be fulfilled as it was written in Section 84? But yet Joseph Fielding Smith doesn't get that same connection here. They are still looking forward to going back during the 19th century in the 19th century Mormon church. We find also, what do we have here in Volume 13? Is that what you have
I have Volume 10.
Volume 10.
Volume 10, George Q. Cannon, okay. On October 23rd, 1864, on page 344, this is what he says. "The day is near when a temple shall be reared in the center stake of Zion, and the Lord has said his glory shall rest on that house in this generation, that is in the generation in which the revelation was given, which is upwards of 30 years ago."
Okay. If that's the case, then why is it the modern Mormon church thinks that there was some kind of permanent cancellation on that prediction? That is not the way the 19th century Mormon church was looking at that. They are not seeing it quite the same. Now, Orson Pratt in Volume 14, page 275, he cites that prediction in Section 84, verses 4 and 5. He cites that. And then he goes on to say, "Here then we see a prediction, and we believe it. Yes, the Latter-day Saints have as firm faith and rely upon this promise as much as they may upon the promise of forgiveness of sins when they comply with the first principles of the gospel. We just as much expect that a city will be built, called Zion, in the place and on the land which has been appointed by the Lord our God, and that a temple will be reared on the spot that has been selected, and the cornerstone of which has been laid in the generation when this revelation was given. We just as much expect this as we expect the sun to rise in the morning and set in the evening, or as much as we expect to see the fulfillment of any of the purposes of the Lord our God pertaining to the works of his hands. But, says the objector, 39 years have passed away. What of that? The generation has not passed away. All the people that were living 39 years ago have not passed away. But before they do pass away, this will be fulfilled."
Well, somebody from today, a current Mormon, might say, well, that was just his opinion. Orson Pratt, what would you say to that objection?
The problem is he says this not once, but he says it twice. He gives that same type of a prediction on another speech that he gave.
Yeah, Journal of Discourses, Volume 13, page 362.
Do you have that one in front
of you? I do.
Why don't you read that?
He said, "God has been with us from the time that we came to this land, and I hope that the days of our tribulation are past. I hope this because God promised in the year 1832 that we should, before the generation then living had passed away, return and build up the city of Zion in Jackson County, that we should return and build up the temple of the Most High where we formerly laid the cornerstone. He promised us that he would manifest himself on that temple, that the glory of God should be upon it, and not only upon the temple, but within it, even a cloud by day and a flaming fire by night. We believe in these promises as much as we believe in any promise ever uttered by the mouth of Jehovah. The Latter-day Saints just as much expect to receive a fulfillment of that promise during the generation that was in existence in 1832 as they expect that the sun will rise and set tomorrow. Why? Because God cannot lie. He will fulfill all his promises. He has spoken. It must come to pass."
Sounds very similar to what he said later on. So here you have Orson Pratt making this prediction, and nobody seems to be correcting him. How does he get away with it?
A year later,
you know, to say something like that, you could say, "Hey, Orson, let me talk to you. You kind of blew it on that. You need to tone that down and maybe correct that." But no, he says it, and then he says it again a year later. And then not only does Orson Pratt hold to this prediction, but as we've just demonstrated, we find Heber C. Kimball, we find George A. Smith, Wilford Woodruff. These guys are also looking forward to that. I don't think we read the Heber C. Kimball quote, but he also talks about the desire or the prediction of going back to Zion to build it up.
Yeah, that's volume 5, pages 134 and also 164. He says it twice.
He says it twice.
So for somebody who would say, well, that was just Orson Pratt's opinion or whatever else, come on. I mean, all these guys saying the same thing over and over, that they didn't believe that it was a temporary, or they didn't believe it was a
permanent.
Yeah, it was going to be a temporary thing, and eventually that 1832 prophecy by Joseph Smith was going to come true, that God would do what he intended.
And Orson Pratt seemed very clear on this. I mean, he doesn't hesitate at all. God said it. It's going to happen. Why is the modern Mormon church not saying that?
And you had mentioned earlier, we know where the cornerstones are for the temple. It's at the temple lot folks, the Hendrickites, who own that. And they're very proud that they know exactly where that temple was supposed to go. And you bring out a good point, because I never even thought of it when I was in Kansas City. They called it the Kansas City Temple. Mm-hmm. And they never mentioned anything because it had nothing to do with independence.
Yeah. I think that's a good thing for a Latter-day Saint to think about. Here you have these clear-cut predictions by Joseph Smith. And then you have these other leaders coming across later on, confirming exactly what it was supposed to be, how it was supposed to be understood. And yet today the Mormon Church will take this particular 124, this section 124, and they'll say, oh, that must have been a permanent cancellation. Even though history does not support that conclusion. If you were living in 19th century Utah, you would not believe that that was a permanent cancellation in section 124.
That's
you
an
would
important
think of
point.
It you would think of it as no more than a temporary glitch.
Yep.
But that eventually you were going to go back to build up the New Jerusalem and to build the temple exactly the way Joseph Smith said. But that's not what Mormon leaders say today. You have to ask yourself why.
Thank you for listening. If you would like more information regarding Mormonism Research Ministry, we encourage you to visit our website at www.mrm.org, where you can request our free newsletter, Mormonism Researched. We hope you will join us again as we look at another viewpoint on Mormonism. Have you ever wanted to go to the Holy Land? It's the place where Jesus walked, a place of great significance in our Bibles. In late February of 2013, Mormonism Research Ministry and Utah Lighthouse Ministry are hosting an 11-day trip to Israel. Among other places, we will experience baptism in the Jordan River, walk through Hezekiah's Tunnel, explore Masada, and float in the Dead Sea. During our trip, we plan to spend a day with Israeli resident Joel Kramer, a former Utah pastor and current film producer, who will take us to Cave 1 and Qumran and Jericho as well. In addition, a 7-day pre-extension tour to Turkey is available. Your price includes all transportation, admission fees, meals and taxes, and tips. If you've never been to the Holy Land, or even if you have, join Bill McKeever, Sandra Tanner, and several local Utah pastors for the trip of a lifetime. It all begins February 19th, 2013. Visit theapologeticstudybibletour.com for more information or call 602-788-8864. Or